From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Shadow People with Heidi Hollis. Get ready for that. But here's what's happening. Canada is to suspend visa applications from residents and passport holders from West African countries in the grip of the Ebola outbreak. It's a good decision. This decision follows a similar one by Australia, which drew criticism from the World Health Organization. The ban would apply to countries with widespread and persistent intense transmission, according to Canada. Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea are battling to contain Ebola, which has already killed almost 5,000 people. Good decision by the Canadians. As we reported yesterday, top medical experts are trying to study the spread of Ebola in the United States, and they are predicting that by the end of the year, we could have either 1 to 130 more new cases. A safety device on the Virgin Galactic spacecraft that crashed on Friday, killing a test pilot, had been deployed early. Air Safety Chief Christopher Hart said the feathering device is designed to slow the craft on reentry, activated without a command from the pilots, did it on its own. But he said it was too soon to confirm any possible cause of this crash. Space historian Robert Zimmerman with us. This was a disappointment, Robert, no doubt, wasn't it?
Oh, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. But at the same time, it's par for the course, actually. This is rocket science, and things go wrong. Anyone who thinks that accidents like this won't happen is living in a fantasy world. If we're going to go to the stars, we're going to have to take risks, and people are going to have to die. And the only mistake we could possibly make is to give up, and that would put those deaths in vain. The thing to do as human beings is just to keep going.
Robert, those people who put down $200,000 to $250,000 for a trip to space on this rocket, you think they're thinking, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this?
Well, it's interesting. There have been stories around in the press that about 30 people are considering asking for their deposits back. That's out of 700. Virgin Galactic has admitted that about 3% of their customers have requested refunds. I would say the majority of the people that are involved in this will probably stick to it. It really is going to come down to what the company does over the next 6 months to a year. We're looking at they're under a test right now. If they can show that they will deal with this problem forthrightly, honestly, and fix the engineering or find out what the problem was and admit to the problem and fix it, then a lot of their customers will be reassured. If they don't reassure their customers by a forthright action, then they'll lose those customers. That's how it works.
What is new with your website? Beyond the Black.
Oh, mostly I've been covering these particular space stories right now. The election tomorrow is a big deal, and I've been following that. It's almost like on bated breath what's going to happen, because it will change how the politics will affect space and science and the country in general, George.
Okay, Mr. Zimmerman, thank you so much. A pair of Connecticut junk haulers were stunned to learn that two skulls picked up at a cluttered home of a deceased man on the day before Halloween were human remains and not made of plastic, as they had thought. In Jersey City, New Jersey, when your time is up, your time is up. A man delivering sheetrock at a construction site was killed when a tape measure fell 50 stories and hit him on the head. Can you imagine that? You wake up in the morning, you go to work, you get killed by a tape measure that falls 50 stories. Well, educators in Orange County, Florida, are reviewing a new coloring book before it is placed in schools. It is called the Satanic Children's Big Book of Art Activities. How could they even be thinking about this? The group leading the charge to get it into the schools is the Satanic Temple. The book features children and traditional satanic rituals, along with the pentagram imagery, the Cerberus, the dog, and a maze leading to a spell book. The book also contains anti-bullying measures, probably the only good thing it contains. Political forecasters have busied themselves for months trying to figure out how the Washington agenda will change if Republicans win the Senate in tomorrow's midterm elections and control both houses of Congress for the next couple of years. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. There's going to be change here, John. I can feel it. How about you?
Well, I mean, you know, six of one, half a dozen of another kind of change. I don't think anything is really going to happen. But, you know, the interesting thing about this election is, you know, the Pyrrhic type victory that will happen when, you know, the Mitch McConnell finally gets a shot at a House majority leader. And then that's likely to happen tomorrow. So I think it's a foregone conclusion. All the leading forecasters, and Nate Silver is somebody that I follow from the New York Times, and he's been pretty accurate, like 95-97%. So I do think we're going to see a change. But when I say six of one, half a dozen of another, I mean that nothing is really going to change in the body politic in the United States, because nothing has been happening. It's been complete gridlock with a democratically, you know, controlled Senate for the last 4 years, ever since that fateful day when Obama signed, you know, the Affordable Care Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. So I don't think anything significant will change in this country until the 2016 election. The irony of this election is that if the Republicans take the Senate, it's going to make it very difficult for them to take the presidency in 2016, because most folks sort of instinctually know it's probably not a good thing to have one party controlling your entire government.
Oh, I agree with that. John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. In a moment, Bev Harris joins us for a couple hours. We're going to be talking about her work, black box voting, of course, ballot tampering in the 21st century. Is it continuing? Bev is next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, black box voting. Bev Harris has written about and spent thousands of hours researching voting boxes. Now, when she wrote the book, Black Box Voting, she interviewed election officials, voting machine programmers. Her investigation revealed that the company leaving thousands of sensitive voting system program files on an unprotected website triggered a national investigation. That was the Diebold Election Systems. Bev's back with us. It's been a while, Bev. Good to have you here. It seems like every election, you roll in. What's new with you?
Yeah, and it probably still will. I mean, human nature being what it is.
Well, here we are, midterms rolling up tomorrow. And, of course, talk of major switches again. It is amazing how the public loses interest with those that they elect. You know, when George Bush was elected, everyone was happy. And then by the time he left office, everybody was, you know, throwing their hats in the air saying, get rid of the guy. And they made changes. They made changes during those elections. They brought in Barack Obama, and everybody thought, hey, this is it. He's going to help us. And now everybody feels the same way about him as they did George Bush. Are they ever happy, Bev? Are the voters ever happy?
Well, you know, I blame some of that on the TV news culture that we have now. We're teaching people not to look at broader context, not to look at any kind of complexity, but simply, you know, to look at a bad guy and a good guy. It's sort of like Hollywood stories, you know, where this is the villain and this is the good guy. And then everybody who likes the one guy lines up over here and the other guy's the villain, and vice versa. And it doesn't really get at solutions to what, you know, different problems really are, because everybody is so busy having, you know, a villain and a hero that they're looking for. And I think we really need to stop dumbing ourselves down and start looking at a little bit more complexity, as we used to when we had real news back a few decades back.
You're right about that. So what is new technologically with voting machines these days? Anything changing?
Oh, it's heading in a bunch of different directions at once. It's kind of interesting because the touchscreen voting machines that, you know, were so controversial, about 80% of the locations are no longer using those. They are phasing them out for a number of different reasons. You know, and so most people now are voting on paper ballots, which are scanned with optical technology. They still go through a pretty tamperable computer counting system. But what's next on the horizon, I expect, is going to be a big push toward voting on the internet or voting on mobile phones. It seems like on the surface, like it would make sense. It would be so much easier. The problem is it has no transparency whatsoever. And, you know, even things like, you know, voting for your favorite singer on American Idol, that got hacked. Voting,
that's
in fact,
right.
a lot of the different, you know, TV voting things have been hacked. And, you know, then they come forward and admit it and go, oh, gosh, you know, it was penetrated. But it's not even outside hackers. It's the fact that once you switch to that type of voting, nobody can see anything. And so it turns out to be really completely controlled by who controls the system. And by that, I don't mean the politician who controls the system. I mean the technical administrator.
Yeah, I had heard that Bank of America had some huge website issues today. I don't know if they got hacked or not, but it seems to be a commonplace.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, and it's not always, you know, people want to talk about voting technology as being susceptible to hackers. And yeah, it probably is, but that's not where the real risk is. The risk is that some nameless guy who's out there running the server, who none of us can see or check on in any way, takes a payoff or has a gambling problem and, you know, needs some money, does something. And this is not, I'm writing a new book. It's about time. I think it's been about 10 years.
It is about time. Jeez. Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm exploring in the book is the actual documented cases of when somebody who has control of election systems has ended up getting indicted for embezzling or for stealing or for, you know, all manner of different things that they do. Because I think that's the missing peg in a lot of people. And a lot of people still think it's a theory that, oh, it's a conspiracy theory that anybody would ever be corrupt. Well, it's so common, I'm finding in my research now, that I can't even keep track of all the stories of the actual indictments and convictions in the United States for a day at a time. There's
yeah.
that many of them. And, you know, these are people who, you know, they get caught with their hand in the till. And the idea that we could then say, oh, let's hand them, you know, control of the internet server that we can't see and have no way of checking on, and just figure they will never, ever, not a single person in the 3,000 locations in the United States would ever do anything they shouldn't. That's just not prudent.
Bev, let's go back a little bit during the Kennedy election in 1960 when they they stole Chicago. Now, that was paper ballots. How did they do that? What did they do?
That was old school. And, you know, back in the day, they stole West Virginia, too, in the primary. There's a really interesting book on that. You know, some of the Kennedy guys literally got off a plane with satchels of cash, you know.
Old
don't even hide this stuff. It was like $100,000 to buy the votes to win the primary. The thing about the old school tampering is people keep going back to that thinking that that's being done now, and it's not. That involved ward bosses. It was pretty effective. They had a very organized set of ward bosses who went and got out the vote, and they intimidated people into voting, and got jobs because they didn't vote or did vote a certain way. It's the old Tammany Hall stuff that actually evolved back in the late 1800s. It has gotten much more sophisticated than that. The problem with that is, you know, people figured it out, and we have cell phones, and we could videotape this stuff now, and we can count things. And so, you know, it's much safer and cheaper and simpler to just get one guy who controls a server.
That's right.
Nobody can see what he's doing anyway.
There's no paper trail, right?
Right. There's just, and if they ever, and they often do, find that the things were miscounted, then they say it was a glitch, it was a mistake, it was an error. And their favorite new catchword, you can actually do news searches with this and get a really interesting selection of stories of wrong vote counts. Their favorite new catchphrase is, it was human error. Well, I don't know, you know, and here's my take on human error. It doesn't matter if you're a bank teller, if you lose $10,000 and then go say, it was human error. It's like, so what? You know, you're fired.
Yeah, you're done. You're toast.
Yeah, and in elections, the culture is, and we're not talking about human error of the nice old lady who's working at the polling place. We're talking about an election official who's making $125,000 a year, you know, and has a degree in public administration. And all so it was human error. I just made a mistake. It doesn't matter if it was human error or human deliberate behavior. The votes are gone. Get rid of the person. There's no consequences right now, even when we catch miscounts. And they feel, even in the law of some election laws, they feel that if they can say it was an accident, that it's okay.
Well, Bev,
no
it's,
harm
it's,
done. It was an accident.
It's Tuesday on the East Coast. It's Tuesday here in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. It's election day now. And, you know, we're talking about congressional and Senate races.
Right.
There's not going to be voter fraud for that, is there?
Well, you know, there's another kind of misconception a lot of people have, I think, and that is it certainly is unlikely to be some, control box at the top, you know, that says, hey, I think I'll just control the 50 states. Election fraud. And I prefer the term election fraud because it's not really the hapless person trying to show up for the polls. It's inside jobs usually by the election officials, and that's what the records show with the indictments and so forth. Well, election fraud is kind of a patchwork, and that's how you have to look at it. In the United States, our elections are run by each state and within each state, quite often by each county or municipality. And some of those places are a lot worse than others. So even if you are a United States senator from a particular state, you're not, and even if you have an organization that's going to do tampering, they're not going to tamper all the counties in a state. They're going to know which counties are open for business and have a guy that they can approach. I mean, that's actually a carryover of back in, you know, the day with the Kennedy election and so forth. You know, they didn't do every single place in Illinois. In fact, they say that Richard Nixon did some of the southern Illinois, which is why he didn't protest about what they did to Chicago, because it would have all been uncovered. Yeah, but they don't do every single place. They know which places they have friends in place and which places are open for business, and they're very strategic about it. So one of the things that I always do is I look at places that have had miscounts in the past. I mean, it's such a simple thing. If they counted votes incorrectly in the past, maybe they will again accidentally on purpose, human error, who cares? And that has been absolutely amazing how many times I've gone and looked at those places and analyzed them, and they sure enough do it again. They do it again and again and again and again. The same people are in charge. And when those people finally get, you know, the tolerance is gone for those people's miscounting of elections, and I'm talking about election officials, they often are sort of run out of town or they lose their job, but they go and get another job, often in a bigger location. That's what happened. There was a fellow that was running elections in the Seattle area, and he got in a lot of trouble with the Rossi gubernatorial election because he kept finding more absentee ballots. He found more ballots four times, you know, when they were doing a recount. Just found bags of ballots.
Great detective he was, right?
Yeah. Well, he couldn't. You know, he didn't have much of a name left up into the Seattle area, but he's now running elections in Los Angeles County.
Whoa, that's a little bigger.
And
he gets promoted?
Yes. Yeah, oh, this is very typical. The guy who was running the Cleveland elections, where two of his employees were indicted for tampering with the recount in 2004, he ended up running San Diego County.
Unbelievable.
So what you see is very interesting, and that's why I really like to look at, okay, where have there been problems in the past? First, when you look at those vote counts and see if there's another problem, which is very typical, and also you look at who the personnel were in the elections office and where they've gone, and then you go to their new place, and sure enough,
it happens again. Hold on, Bev. We're going to take this break, but we'll come back and chat more with you in the next hour. We'll take phone calls with Bev Harris right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Bev Harris with us for a couple hours as we talk about black box voting. Bev, also, you know, the pollsters are all saying that there's going to be a Republican sweep on Tuesday. If it's not there, can we assume there's been some fraud?
Well, you know, that's the complication now when you have multiple points of failure, I guess. You know, it could be the polls just didn't get it right, but it also could be that the polls got it right, but the machines in the particular places, as I mentioned, it's not a wholesale deal, but that they managed to grab some of the voting machines and create a false result.
Right.
Right.
There's no,
so you don't know.
You don't know. You've got to balance that.
Even when you, you know, we saw this in 2008. There was one where there was a swing of over 18% from what the polls were the day before. And I went there, and a recount was commissioned, and I caught them in the act of rigging the recount. So apparently they must have rigged the election. Why rig the recount if you didn't rig the election? And that was a presidential primary. So, you know, sometimes when the polls are very, very discrepant, that can act as a red flag to go take a much closer look at the checkpoints in the election. And there's really four of them to look for. You know, there's four things that we need to be able to see and kind of compare and just do the basic accounting on. Then is who can vote, which is the voter list, who did vote, the counting of the vote, and the chain of custody. What I saw in New Hampshire in 2008 when there was that big swing was a complete breakdown in the chain of custody where they were literally altering ballots. We caught them altering ballots. I mean, what more can you say? You know, apparently they wanted the recount to match what they originally stated the count was.
This has been going on, though, since the beginning of voting for politicians, hasn't it?
Yes. Absolutely. You know, you can't pass a law or make a magic system and make the desire to get power in an election go away. You know, you're going to always have that motivation to capture power by any means necessary, including illicit means. The antidote to that, though, is public transparency. If you just remember the idea that the public actually owns the government, you know, the public is sovereign over the instrument of government which it created and pays for. If the public can see each step of the way, you know, who can vote, who did vote, the counting of the vote, the chain of custody, then at least you have a chance of catching it when they have tampered it. You know, you're never going to get in any kind of these, corruption is the same way. You're never going to get a situation where there's no corruption. But people have known for years now that transparency is one of the antidotes for corruption. In fact, there's a huge organization called Transparency International that's done amazing work in terms of dealing with some very, very corrupt regimes simply by opening them up to public transparency. It doesn't mean it's never going to happen again, but it's a strategy. Having a police force doesn't make crime go away.
No,
but
it doesn't.
It's a strategy.
Would you say that our election system is fraught with fraud?
In places it is, but I wouldn't. It certainly is more than I thought. I will say that. When you actually go in and examine it, one of the telltale signs is to see if you even can get the transparency. That, you know, I have found that if you go to a place and they refuse to let you see anything, then they, surprise, surprise, often when you finally do find the stuff, turn out to have had fraud. There's a situation happening right now in Santa Cruz, New Mexico. There's a gentleman who's just determined. He's done brilliant work. His name's John Brakey. And all he asked for There's a couple of things. He wanted the logs, the audit logs, because these computers produce audit logs. You know, they have all the events. He wanted the audit logs, and he wanted a contract with the vendor. And he has been in court, I don't know how long, he's won, they still haven't turned the stuff over. Now, I can tell you that I would not be a bit surprised if once the documents finally show up, there's big gaps missing in the audit log and there's all kinds of other problems. And I'm saying this as a constructive measure. One of the first things you can do to see if a particular jurisdiction has a problem is simply ask for the records. And if they obstruct you getting the records, or ask to watch the counting of the vote. If, in in Texas, the whole state decided that nobody could watch anything, and they made it illegal to have a video. I'm not talking about watching people vote or taking away their privacy. I'm talking about after the polls close, they're running poll tapes out of these machines, closing them up, you know, sealing stuff. They're saying nobody can see that, and it's a crime if you videotape that. Well, why would that be a crime if you weren't trying to hide something? So anytime you see someplace trying to actually block public transparency, it's a pretty good bet that they need a closer look in terms of the integrity of their elections.
Is our system, Bev, any better than the voting system in Iran or in Russia or wherever?
Yeah.
These other nations, are we still better than them? Okay.
Yeah. One of the things that I think we lose track of, I mean, you know, Americans don't like to learn anything about other countries, those boring other countries, international, yuck. I finally decided, look, I got to figure this stuff out because Germany is way ahead of us. They're doing way better than the United States. So is Ireland. So are some other places where they've, you know, really taken the bull by the horns and increased transparency tremendously. You know, yeah, there's some really bad places. And the United States, here's what we do better than a lot of places. We don't have violence. You know, I mean, in Iraq, I'm sorry, they were, you know, killing people.
Yeah.
If you go to the polls, you might die. We don't have, in Zimbabwe or Sierra Leone, I believe it was, they were chopping off people's hands for voting for the wrong place. I mean, they were chopping. In fact, and this is, I would say it's ironic at least, they've recently decided to go to a biometric voter ID system, and they had a problem because they have so many people who had their hands chopped off, and they had to take their fingerprints.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. But, you know, there are places that are really, really undemocratic completely. And there are, but I'll tell you, a growing trend worldwide is a sort of a veneer of a fake democracy. What countries have found is they can't get that World Bank money and all those good, you know, international.
Unless they're in the club.
Funding, unless they pretend they're a democracy. Some of the countries are getting much better at pretend democracies, but when you just, you know, scratch the surface a little bit, they're totally not.
You know, back to the internet voting or your smartphone voting, which I think will happen, that will also change the perspective of the demographics because most of your young voters, your young people are internet and smartphone savvy. I think those are the ones who would vote by droves with this technology. Would that then change the complexity?
Yeah.
And would that change
the way to make it? If there was a way to make that transparent so that we could see, you know, who it was that actually voted as opposed to some printout that some, you know, nerd guy came up with, and we could see, you know, some way to authenticate the validity of that count, if there was a way to do that. But now, if there's not a way to do that, yes, you'll get a whole bunch more of these folks participating, but at the flip of a switch, their votes may not be the same. So, the problem is we haven't really solved the issue of transparency. There is a way to solve it, but it's like, do we want to go there? If you remove political privacy and you open it up so everyone can see how everyone else voted, then that solves the transparency part of the paradigm with remote voting. But as long as you have political privacy and you can't link the vote back to the voter, publicly, they do it actually secretly. But you know, if you can't link it back publicly, then you don't have that transparency or any way to actually, you know, make the numbers add up and check on it. So that's got to be solved, because just having a lot more people voting, if the system has no integrity, doesn't really help either.
If you were going to fix the system, Bev, what would you do? How would you start?
One of the first things I'd do, I mean, I like things that are inexpensive and that get a lot of effect for just a small amount of work. There's a tremendously interesting thing that Pakistan, believe it or not, has done to help with both with disenfranchisement and voter stuffing. They have made a cell phone app so that everybody can check whether or not they're registered as many times as they want. You know, they can check for their sister. Everybody can find out who everybody is. And, you know, if they're registered, if they're on the list, where to vote. And, you know, why don't we do that here? I mean, what a simple thing. It costs them and it's even doesn't really cost anything, because they pay like 4 cents a call to check on their voter registration. And they found out that something like 53% or something of the country in Pakistan, which isn't even literate, use that app to check if they were registered. They also discovered when they posted those lists that, you know, a huge number of people were stuffed onto a list in one place, because it was public. Everyone could see they were stuffed on the list. So, you know, that kind of simple use of technology to take care of that problem, it would be really helpful. In terms of the vote counting and the corroboration of that, that's a stickier problem, but one of the simplest, most elegant solutions I've seen is actually up in Eureka, California, which is in Humboldt County, where they use paper ballots, they run them through a computer scanner, and then they also run them through just a regular document scanner, like any of us have in our home office, and they, you know, let everybody have copies of the ballots.
I tell you what, you wouldn't have to worry about bad weather, snow conditions, rainy days. Voting turnout with smartphones and the internet would be huge, wouldn't it?
Well, that's a different topic, though, because it might be huge. We don't know.
It'd be bigger than it is
now.
That's
another thing. We think it sounds like it would be, but you know what's interesting in the locations that have tried it, and this is counterintuitive, but the turnout has gone down. It was tried in Vancouver, British Columbia. It was tried in Hawaii. And the turnout for the same election in Hawaii that had been 28%, it wasn't the, you know, the main hors d'oeuvre, they ran it with internet voting, and it was 7%. Which is pretty dismal. And this is also counterintuitive, but it's borne out by the facts, which is why it's so important for us to actually look at the facts and go beyond the, you know, we think it would be. It's also costing more, which is crazy.
A lot more?
Yeah, you know, some of these companies that are doing the internet voting are charging by the vote.
Oh, wow. What a great scam for them.
Yeah, we have to not make assumptions about this. I like the idea of, first of all, we have to solve the problem with transparency. If we can't see anything about what happened to that vote and whether it's counted accurately, there is no point in doing it, whether it would increase turnout or not. So that's got to be solved first. And there is a tendency to want to rush ahead to increase turnout, assuming it would, which there's no data yet, surprisingly. The data shows it actually drops turnout, but that could be for whatever reason. I don't know. But first of all, if it even did increase turnout, we'd have to make sure that the election is transparent. If we can't figure out how to do that, we can't do it.
No, not at all. Well, it's a huge issue, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it has a lot of potential if we could solve the transparency problem. But that is a pretty tough nut to crack if we keep political privacy. And political privacy, let's go back to the situation where they were chopping off people's hands, you know, in Sierra Leone and doing
that. I'm baffled by that one.
You know, what is more an immediate risk here is loss of political privacy. In 2012, we had several big corporations tell their employees that there would be massive layoffs if the guy that they didn't want won. Now, I guess if your employer is saying that and sending it out in a memo, you don't really want him to see how you voted if you're voting for the other guy, because you might be the layoff. And that's a genuine concern.
Sure.
So I'm not sure intimidation Absolutely. Is as immediate a concern here, but I think intimidation in terms of economic security maybe is.
So you once said that Colorado is out of control. What does that mean?
Yeah. Colorado has lost its mind. That's all. It's like if you take every problematic idea and roll it all into one, it ends up in Colorado. They did this massive supposed election reform bill. And this bill has them sending out ballots to everyone, whether they asked for it or not, whether they're an active voter or not, and in many cases, even if they don't even live there anymore and perhaps don't even live in the state. So they have tens of thousands or more of ballots, live ballots floating around with no real person attached to them. Then they have people going door to door harvesting ballots. I said, it's okay, you know, you can go door to door and ask people to give them your ballot so you can turn it in or do whatever with it. To me, it's so idiotic to hand your ballot to some person with a box at the door, but they're doing that.
Oh, my God,
they
yeah.
also have put a barcode on the ballots, which ties directly back to the voter ID, and the information is collected on how everybody voted. Now, are they denying this? No. The election officials are saying, and have the court said this is okay? No, they've said it's unconstitutional. However, the election officials are saying, well, we believe we have the right to see how people voted, as long as it's just the government.
When I was running a television station in St. Louis, Bev, I brought in a fellow by the name of Steve Teichner, who I believe is still in the business, and he would do exit polling. And he was so spot on. I mean, his accuracy was unbelievable. And I had worked with Steve in Detroit and then started using him in St. Louis. And he pinpointed the mayoral election right on to the point where the challenger was not
Detroit.
The... That was in Detroit. But in St. Louis, I brought him in to do some work there, too. And he pinpointed that election right on to the point where the challenger was going to win. And we called him up and said, look, you're going to win the election based on our exit poll. I want you on our newscast live in the studio so nobody else could have him. And he was in shock. He said, what do you mean I'm going to win? I'm actually going to win? They said, yeah, you're going to win by like 10 points. And so he came. So that was the deal. And so he came on. We had him exclusively. The polls hadn't closed yet, but we said our exit poll is showing that, that Vincent Schemel, who was the mayor of St. Louis for a number of years, was going to win. And sure enough, he won, and he won by that margin. Just truly amazing exit polling. I guess they still do that, don't they?
They're fading it out. That's another sort of red flag to me. They are fading it out in some places. In the 2012 presidential, I was a little surprised to learn that there were a number of states where they decided not to do exit polling. This is a major, I don't buy it's because they said they knew who was going to win that state, because there's also a lot of other races going on in those states, you know. It's not just one race. It also seemed a little bit presumptuous to say, well, we're not going to exit poll Oklahoma because we just know, you know, what's going to happen. And Tennessee was one of those states. Tennessee was actually a swing state, you know, in 2000. So I don't understand. So we're actually seeing pulling back from some of the exit polls.
That's
and another thing we're seeing with exit polling that's very strange. We've seen this for more than 10 years now. There's two sets. But they're sort of integrated together seamlessly.
Hold on, Bev. We'll talk more about that. Plus, I want to take your phone calls. If you've had any voting impropriety that you've witnessed or you want to share a story or question, check in with us next.